What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Rockcast. Today, I have a super fun guest on. He hasn't been on in a long time. So, Jaden Bales is joining us again. And actually, dude, I just talked about your food podcast with us in a Tipsy Tuesday today because I had to go back and listen to it because I have some hunts that are going to require a little more thought of weight. So, I was listening to that one and trying to get my food dialed. But anyways, thanks for hopping on, man.
Oh yeah, you bet. It's funny you mentioned that too, because so life update, I am no longer working full time for Backcountry Fuel. But so now I have to go buy food again. And because earlier it was just like whatever's left over. And now I'm like back in that situation where I'm looking at my food list going like, oh no. I don't even know what I like anymore. It's always been new. So I'm in that same boat, man. It's a pain in the butt.
Dude. Yeah. You know what? I'm still trying to find like good meat bars. And we were at Sam's Club yesterday and Jack Link's makes some that I don't know what they call them, but you don't get them from the store. Like I've never seen them in a convenience store, but they had like a big pack of like 15 of these things that looked pretty good, so I got them, and I guess we'll see how they taste, but I want to get, like, an elk bar, you know, like, the elk bar from Onnit, but those things are freaking expensive, and I just don't want to drop, like, $6 on a bar, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally understand there. Plus, so I think I'm just going to go to making my own jerky, just based off of some leftover elk meat I had from last year, and, man, I swear to goodness, everything that I've bought just destroys my insides that's in that meat category. So I should probably stay away from it anyways.
Oh, shit. Oh, man.
It's really sad.
Yeah, that is. You know, that is sad. I'm trying to get to more to where it's like, I don't know, meat and cheeses and like less bars, less sugary bars. It's really hard to do, but I'm trying to get there.
Yeah, you bet. Well, it's good. It's like these scout trips that are happening over the summer and stuff. They are perfect for testing grounds for your big trip Backcountry Fuel. So anyway, that's a
heck yeah.
That's such a tangent.
It is.
Go listen to that podcast if someone wants to listen to us go real deep in that stuff.
Hell, heck yeah. It's episode 3. So everybody should go check it out. But we're going to talk about something not even remotely related to that today. I was talking to you about deer the other day, and you've been scouting high country bucks, and looks like you've been finding a lot of them. And so we were talking about you. You had sent me a picture of a buck, and then you sent me a picture of some field judging things that you did and a score that you came up with. And just like the food thing, it was so, I don't know how to say it, like, I don't want to say precise, but it was so like methodical of how you do it that I was like, dude, we got to have you on and talk about it.
Yeah. Well, and the first thing I said was like, dude, Jordan, I've not killed that many bucks. Like, I don't know if I can be that much of a help, but I think maybe the fact that I've gone to school on this, when I say gone to school, just been like talking, measuring every deer I can find get my hands on, and then just trying to replicate it in the field for these last few years. Hopefully that can be of help for folks, especially if you're just trying to teach yourself. If you're already an advanced scorer, this might not be too helpful, but I'll try to do my best here to break down kind of how I've been going at it. So that sound good?
Oh, dude, heck yeah. I think from like a how-to or like a just give people an idea where to start, because I'm really bad at looking, you know, I'll look at something and be like, oh yeah, that's like a 180 buck, but then I don't look at the extras. So like that buck that I shot in Nebraska, I was like, yeah, he'll go like, this is like a 180 buck. Well, yeah, I mean, his frame for 4 points, 180, but he's got two inlines that, I mean, took him to, I mean, dang near 200. So that's the stuff that I don't look at, but I think the process, right? Like the process of how you do it, I think will get you a lot closer.
Well, I think it's also important to like, just here's a little caveat before we even dive in too deep into this whole score thing. I think there are people have missed the boat on some of this score thing. When you look at like a deer that scores really well, and you're trying to get a deer that scores really well, you know, you're trying to add probably a little bit more challenge because you're looking for an older age class, all that good stuff. I love scores. But there are a ton of old and mature bucks out there that don't score worth a crap. And I don't think that we should totally like say like you shouldn't be shooting 150 inch buck if it's 28 inches wide and has great mass, but just as crabby, you know, crabby tines. All this stuff is just kind of like, if you're really wanting to dive into the score thing, you know, we'll do that. But don't assume that this means like you have to shoot every buck that has like it has to score well, because there's some big deer out there that don't score worth a crap. So,
dude,
I think that's probably a good caveat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think we're going to have Sydney Lamb back on. And we did that not to get too far off the track to begin with, but we're going to have her back on. I've been talking to her about, you know, we did that mule deer biologist. She's a mule deer biologist. She's just a biologist, I guess, in Utah. And so we were going to talk about some different things. And that's one thing that I wanted to talk to her about was like what it takes to like to grow a big, you know, like what it takes to get like 180 plus inch buck. Like there's so many, it's not right. age dependent. Like just because you don't see 180 inch deer, it doesn't mean that the thing's not old, I guess. So, I think that goes right along with what you're saying, but yeah, I think we're going to get her on and talk about that and talk about the different factors. Cause dude, those big bucks, like it takes a lot to make a really big deer yeah. like that, not just age.
Yeah, for sure. I actually just interviewed Kevin Monteith for my job a couple weeks ago. And man, he talks about how so much has to go right with the mom even has to have really good nutrition, as well as the buck itself has to have really good nutrition. And then you have to have like a lot of other factors go into it year on a year basis to get good age class or to get good antler growth, let alone the age class. So there's some cool stuff. And one of the things also that probably folks should take into consideration is there's a lot of this whole field judging deal that needs to be taken into consideration for where you're actually at. Like an Oregon buck, you know, does not have the same, I'm not going to hold it to the same standards as I would a Wyoming high country buck, right? Mm-hmm. A deer on the Henry Mountains shouldn't probably be, compared directly to a deer from Eastern or Western Nebraska, you know, like these are not apples to apples comparisons. So when we're talking about these field judging things, I think folks should also start from the baseline of like, what is in this place that I'm going? Because, I just measured my, Oregon buck I got with a bow, quite a few years ago, and its skull across, you know, the width of it is 6 inches across. And I measured a mature buck here in the office and it is 8 inches across. There already you're setting yourself off for having different measuring sticks based on how different deer in different areas are built. So that's probably step one is like understand what kind of deer you're kind of working with. And I know you've talked about before, like on your guys's place out in Nebraska, like you guys just don't get high scoring deer. Yeah. But you still have mature deer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We've got mature bucks. It just seems like, I think it's like a genetic thing. We have this really narrow, tall genetic. That's like 3-point. That's another one too. We've got like this 3-point genetic where they just don't fork on their back forks. And, it's super frustrating, but like we killed a buck last year that was, I mean, older than the hills, super, super massive, but he's just a big three. I mean, it just is what it is, right?
Yeah. Well, and, here's kind of a shameless plug, but like a thing that I talk about on some Mealy Monday podcast I do with Cody Rich. This one podcast I just did, we talk about a T score where a buck with really good width and, you know, outside spread and a buck with really good height. You put those two things together and you come up with a T score. If it's over 40, generally that's a mature buck. So I'm looking at my 3x3 here, which is probably a lot like the 3x3s you have on your place. Man, it's 26 inches wide and its widest points, and it's 16 inches tall. And my simple math here says that's 42T. And, you know, that's a good buck. And I think, you know, in places like Oregon or Nebraska, maybe where and obviously there's always exceptions to the rule, but maybe where the average mature buck doesn't score real well, that's a good option to try to identify how old a buck is or is not.
Yeah. With that, so with that Oregon buck versus like a Wyoming buck, have you seen, or just other places, have you seen a difference in like their size, like their head size, like maybe ear to ear, like a deer's face being bigger? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where it's like, man, just the overall body size, especially, I think Colorado probably has some bigger deer, just overall bigger sized deer. Same with the Wyoming high country. But then not far from where I live in a pretty deserty spot in Wyoming. We don't have the forage to produce real big deer. So even like within Wyoming, you got to understand like what the biology is kind of behind these bucks that are like getting, allowing them to get to these real big sizes. You know, I picked up a lot of sheds this last spring of deer here close by that are just real spindly, and you know, they're not going to ever score real well if they're, you know, an inch or two less than a Wyoming range buck all the way around. So, you know, it's one of those deals where you just got to know a little bit about the forage and the type of deer that are there. But yeah, I think you absolutely have some difference in deer sizes and difference in deer heads. So take that into consideration and err on the side of, just to start, err on the side of giving yourself some conservative guesses here, because it's always good to walk up to a buck and have some ground growth rather than ground shrinkage. So take that in consideration.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, for sure. So should we just dive right in? I went down and measured my Wyoming buck, just some facial features that I'll just touch on super quick. So, from about the middle of his forehead, to out to the tip of his nose, it was about 10 inches, like give or take, you know, half inch, ear tip to ear tip. He was like 21, and his ears are pinned up a little bit, but not too bad. But they were about 21. I would say that's on the smaller side is 21. His eye was an inch and a half, like, you know, lengthwise. His ear width, if you just go across the widest point in his ear, was 3.5 inches. And then his ear length for just, you know, one ear was 8 inches.
Cool, man. That's, those are good things to know, especially that ear length. So I, like you were kind of saying, all these features kind of vary from place to place. Like I was looking at, you know, this Wyoming range buck that's in the office, and like, it's got a really big skull, right? But the ears on that buck are 8 inches. Tony Lombardi, who I've talked to, he runs an outfit up in Montana. He sticks to an 8-inch ear mark too. And then, so confirmed with you, man, in a different part of Wyoming, there's another buck that has 8-inch ears. I think that is a pretty consistent measuring stick. And it's one that I think that folks could use, is, you know, you're trying to like shape, you know, you're trying to like use something nearby that's a constant that you could use to kind of judge how big this critter is. And the ears, man, the ears, I think, are the number one thing that you can use to like kind of give you some consistency from place to place and buck to buck. So that's kind of interesting that's also what you found.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I should have measured this Nebraska buck, but he looked so, I mean, they're beside each other and they look the same. So I just kind of figured that they were, they're probably pretty dang close to the same. One thing I wanted to touch on too is like, and this is it's sort of a pet peeve of mine, you know, when somebody says, you know, I've got a, you know, he was a 35 inch buck, or, you know, a 30 inch buck or whatever. A lot of the times those guys are going off of outside spread, but outside spread doesn't count when you're scoring. So that can be kind of confusing too, I think, to people.
Yeah. And man, my favorite example of this is Nick Schmidt's buck that he shot in Oregon. Are you familiar with that?
I'd have to look at a picture. I'm sure I've seen a picture.
Oh yeah, dude. It is like, I think it's 37 inches wide. It's just absolutely absurd. It's a big 3-point. But it scores like 165 inches. It's like, it just blows the socks off of width, right? But like, if you're taking it to Boone and Crockett, obviously it's just not going to score that well, because it flares straight out. It doesn't have the pieces of it that you actually judge for a Boone and Crockett score, for instance. So it's important to remember, like, you can have good width, but you do have to have those, like, the main beam length to accompany it for you to have a decent score. So like this buck I found a couple weeks ago, I was looking at it and, you know, it really doesn't have that much width, as especially for like a, you know, upper 170s, low 180s class buck. This deer has, you know, it's just on the outside of its ear. So the inside spread I figured was 22 inches, just like exactly what you're talking about. And, but you know, like, and so the outside is maybe 20, 25, 26 wide is what I'm giving it. But God dang, it wraps all the way around and, you know, he completes that cage. And so that's how you know, like, you're going to get some good length out of those main beams if it comes back around and makes that nice basket. So, yeah, when you're looking at the bucks that are, like, real wide, also take into consideration how well it wraps around like that. And that's another one where a good rule of thumb is, like, if you see a really good wrap around and it just looks like a nice basket, you're going to expect that each of those main beams, if they're symmetrical, they're going to be roughly as long as that buck is wide. You can get within a couple inches, an inch or two on each by doing that kind of assumption, just because it's really dang hard to try to, you know, measure up that main beam length if you're not holding that buck and, or aren't super, super close to it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So should we just dive? You want to just dive right into what you look at when you first find a buck?
Yeah, you bet. So, oh man, I think we've kind of touched on it, but just to like break it down, you know, step by step of what I've been kind of taught and what I start looking at is a first thing is that width, you know, like a big wide buck is real impressive. And that's one of the rays, like a big boxy frame is real impressive. And that's what you're looking for, you know, just to start is that frame. How wide does that buck look and how tall does that buck look? You know, like you were saying, 20, if you can get those antlers on the outside of their ears, the inside spread on the outside of the ears, you know, you're talking 22 inch inside spread at least.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get even bigger with these bigger skulled bucks, you know, whether it's a Colorado high country buck or Wyoming buck, you know, there's some variation there. But it's at least 22 wide, you know, that's great. That's a good start. Then you look at that kind of that height that's coming off of that back of that buck, and man, if you can get a big boxy frame buck that looks like he's got, you know, 2 to 2.5 ears tall. So what we're talking about there is you take that ear as you're visually looking at it and you know, superimpose another ear on top of it. And then you superimpose a half a ear on top of that. Two is that long, man, you're looking at a buck that's got at least, you know, 16 inch G2s. Because you got to count for that first where it forks at the bottom. So, and that's a great place to start. You know, like, do you have good width? Do you have good height? Yes or no? And then you can kind of work your way out to some of these tine lengths. You know, it's really important to make sure if you want a high scoring buck that you have those deep forks, you know, all around, but it's different if, you know, there's a small buck. If you've got a buck with a tight spread and he's not very tall and you have good looking tines on him, that's still going to be a lower scoring deer than if you have a wide buck with tall backs and good forks. That's a different deer, right? So double check that. And then, you know, one of the things, especially if you're looking through a spotting scope, is you look at those tines and you go like, are they good or not? It's more of like a black and white when you're field judging. Like, are those good tines or not? You're not necessarily trying to automatically like assign digits to them, mm-hmm. just because that's dang hard. You got to get real close to get those good, you know, a good view of what a guesstimate on these tines are. But then the other thing you want to look at is so first you looked at width, you've looked at height, you looked at your tine length. Is it good or not? And then you can start picking apart some of the finer details that are harder to look at. One of those is going to be your mass. You really want that buck, man, and it's hard in the velvet too, but you really want that buck to carry mass throughout the antler. Kind of like I was saying here before, I don't really care if I just want a little bit, but bucks near Lander, Wyoming, in this kind of deserty sage stuff, man, they just don't carry the mass very far out their antlers, you know, and they drop off a lot compared to some of the bucks that are kind of in those legendary areas. So that's gonna, you know, if you lose an inch of circumference in the mass, shoot, that's 4 inches a side. That's 8 inches all around. That's the difference between a 172 and 180 inch buck, you know, if he has good mass or not.
Yeah.
So that's pretty important. And then the other thing, and it's in the same vein as acknowledging that mass measurement, is looking at and seeing if they have brow tines. You know, if you're talking to me, Jaden, about shooting a buck and everything else looks good and he doesn't have any brow tines, that deer's still going to die. But yeah, when you're talking about, like, is this deer going to score real well and he doesn't have brow tines, man, it makes it harder because, again, you have these two measurements that could be upwards of, you know, good brow tines, 4 inches a piece. That's 8 inches there too. So those are the last two things I look at after you kind of check off the other boxes though.
Yeah. And then, you know, the beam, a main beam is really hard to look at. And you always hear, like, you know, when they turn sideways, look at the beam in relationship to the nose. And that's actually why I went out and measured that deer's face, is, and he was about 10 inches. It's because you can kind of look like it's so hard with main beams too, because of the shape of a buck. You know, you could have two 160 inch 4-point bucks, but they're just, their frames might be shaped a little bit different and they might not look the same at all. So that's tough. But I think that's a good rule of thumb, that if that main beam tip looks like it at least not lines up with his nose, I think that's, I mean, you're in the, you're not looking at a small deer anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Now, it is kind of interesting. You can, there, man, and this is where you're talking about field judging. There's always exceptions, right? There's a buck here that's mounted. It's the one I keep referring to. This buck that's mounted in our office, it's only 18 inches inside spread. You know, it's probably a mid 170s deer, because its main beams, man, are 23 inches long. They wrap all the way around and come up and tight. So you got to account for that, because that deer wouldn't, you know, be as long as his nose if you were to look at it from that side profile. But that's, again, like an exception to the rule. So I love that rule, man. Just if it comes out to his nose for his main beam, then yeah, this is going to be a good deer. But if it doesn't, take another gander, because, you know, something else could be kind of funky if you're just looking at it from the side.
Yeah. What's a good main beam that you've been around? Like, what's maybe an average? I think that buck down there, is he's got 24 inch main beams.
How wide is your buck that's 24 inch main beams?
25.
Yeah. I have kind of been testing that out, and I think it's fairly consistent that your main beam length, a good main beam length, is an inch or two shorter than how wide you are. That's a pretty easy way to guess it, and without doing a lot of extra work. Now, obviously, like I said, you get closer to that son of a gun if you can, so you can really get a better look and make a better guess. But, you know, 2 inches shorter than how wide he is pretty standard.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. So let's see, another one. What about those back tines? I measured him down there and I don't remember. He was in that 15-16. But I mean, 14 is still a pretty decent back fork, I would say.
Yeah, and that's where, the back tines are just primed to use those ears as measuring sticks. You know, you're going to lose about 5-6 inches between the top of that deer's head and where that G2 starts forking. When we say the G2, that first tine, right, off the main beam. And so you got to account for that. But then you start stacking ears on top of that. And if you've got two ears tall behind that, yeah, that should be a good buck. You know, 16 inch G2. That's a great G2. I kind of like toss some numbers together. Cause if you use that rule of eights for the tines, mm-hmm, you can really get a close to 180 buck just using that rule. So if you're two ears high on your G2, you're one ear long on your G3 and you're one ear long on your G4, you've got the makings of a 180 buck. Like that's 16 inches, 8 inches, 8 inches for tine length. Yeah. You could probably get there pretty easy with the other measurements.
Dude. Yeah. And then I think the toughest one is mass. And mass is a dang tough one. On those bigger deer, I don't know. So I measured, and I'll have to just put a picture of this deer that I'm talking about in there so people can see him. But we scored him after we got him mounted. I never green scored him because I just literally didn't have time. But after he got mounted, we put a tape on him, and he was 188 and change. And he had his mass, I believe he was 5 3/4 inch bases on his mass. I'd have to measure the rest of him. I don't remember what he was, but he carried it out quite a ways. What is some of your experiences with that?
Yeah, I think any buck that's that 5 1/2 inch, 6 inch at the very at the base, you're gonna have the makings of some really good mass, right? Normally they use, and in the bucks that I've been measuring, they lose about 1/2 inch at every mass measurement if you have the brow tines, and that's because that second measurement is above the brow tine. You get some grace there. So you know your 5 3/4 buck, you know his H2 as they call it, you know, is going to probably be 5 1/4, something close to that. And then the next one's going to be 4 3/4, you know, and it just kind of goes off by 1/2 inch throughout. One of the things when you're field judging those though, is just like, you should look like those bases take up most of the head of that buck. There shouldn't be a whole lot of space there in between the antlers, where they come out of the head. You know, that really gives you a start. Especially when it's hard horned, it's dang hard when they're velvet though. Like this buck here is in the velvet, and that I'm looking at in my office, and he looks like he carries his mass throughout, but he drops off there and is, you know, 3 1/2 inches at that last mass measurement. So you do have to kind of account for whether or not you're in the velvet or not. And if you think a buck looks impressive in the velvet, or like looks good in the velvet, just know that you should mentally kind of knock a little bit of that off. And then if he looks giant in the velvet, then that's where you know, like, ah, we've got good mass on this deer, because that velvet just, they're just so full of blood. They have that fuzz, you know, that gives it a little shadow on the outside too. You got to account for that when you're looking at them. And no, just don't get disappointed if you go, oh, dude, that deer's got 7 inch bases. And you walk up to him after you've, you know, stuck an arrow or shot him, and he's got 5 inch bases. You like right there, you've lost. Wait, is that right? 2 inches aside. Oh yeah, 16 inches total. Man, that would be a major difference, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah, dude, for sure. And I think mass is one of the things that's often overlooked or can be overlooked, especially if you're doing a hunt where, I don't know, maybe a rut hunt or something where they might come through fast, or you know what I mean, you don't have time to sit down and just look at them for a long time. Especially there's bucks that get big frames and they don't have much for mass. And I think it's easy to overlook, because I'm guilty of it. So, which it's fine.
What are some of those bucks out there in Nebraska? What are some of their mass measurements? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, they're not as good. Typically we're like 4 1/2. I mean, you know, 4 4 1/2. It doesn't seem out there in Wyoming, and I don't know if it's like the high country buck thing, or if it's just harder grass there. Like we're here in the sand hills, we call it, the cattle people call it harder grass. I don't really know how to explain that, but it's just a it's just a nutrition thing, you know, in the grass in different areas. But we just don't seem to get that good mass. They're exceptions to every rule, right? Just like you were saying. But I can't think of a mule deer that's been killed here that's got like 6 inch bases.
Okay. Well, that's good to know though. Cause, do you have any alfalfa fields right there?
We do. Yep. Yep. We do.
Yeah. Okay. That kind of ruins my theory. I was like, man, this Oregon buck I shot, it's got 5 1/2 inch bases and looked massive. When I walked up on him. But it was also like, it was kind of a ag field fed buck that was bedding up on the hillside in the bitter brush and sagebrush and stuff in the day. And I don't know. I do think it's often tied to feed that genetic, or not the genetic, the mass, whether it's going to be present or not. But I'm not super sure, just because, man, you look at some of those Colorado bucks, especially in the late season, they've got tons of mass. They're super bladed out and they've just like got some funky stuff going on. And you know, like those bucks are living in just like the prime habitat, the aspen stands on the edge of the sagebrush, and then the high country that's just got all the forbs and shrubs and stuff that you could want. I think that you do see some correlation there with better feed and that mass measurement for sure.
Dude, yep. I totally agree with that. Did you have anything else you were thinking about?
Well, I also wanted to mention though that like it's super easy, and I could look at 140 inch and like a small 3 or 4 point, I could look at those and just be stoked, right? Like especially if they're walking away. So if you're trying to judge a buck, just like note, like, it's your first reaction of like, oh, that's a good deer. You shouldn't then like feel bad if you start picking it apart and it starts scoring less and score less. If it trips your trigger, that's great. And you know, like, I like just looking at deer. The other thing is though, like, when you are starting to pick it apart, don't try to pick it apart from behind. It's really hard to get an idea of how wide, especially that buck is from a rear view, because those ears generally are kind of pinned back, and it's hard to really tell how wide that deer is. So if he looks giant walking away, that's normal. You should be excited, but wait until they flip around and then get a maybe better, closer look if you're really trying to hold out for something special, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So one thing I was going to say was on those measurements, I mean, just because you look at him and you're like, oh, he's got, you know, short main beams, I mean, he can make up for it other places. Like, that doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing. You know what I mean? Like, this buck, this Wyoming deer, he didn't, on his back left fork, he has really weird fork, and it's not even a fork. It's just like a cheater. Well, you know, you look at him and you're like, all right, well, he's not going to break. Well, I did anyways. I was like, well, he's probably not going to break 180 because he doesn't have a good back fork on the one side. Well, he did. And I think it was just because like he had good beams and he had a little bit of extras, and that made up for it. And so I think sometimes it's hard to say that a deer is going to be something when he's got those extras, because he might make up for it. You know what I mean? Just because he's lacking somewhere doesn't mean that he's not going to make up for it somewhere else.
Oh, for sure. Are you a nets for fishes type person? Or
yeah, dude, nets are for fishes. If he grew it, he earns it.
That's funny. I flipped my buddy Hayden a lot of shit because he shot a 212 inch buck, and like 14 inches of it are a dropper, you know?
Oh my
like
God.
That doesn't count. You know, it totally does. I mean, I like to rib folks, but man, like you said, I love a buck with some trash too. If they grew it, man, I give it to them. It's so cool.
Yeah, dude, for sure. Man, I'm trying to think what else. I mean, I would just tell people the best way to check is ground check them. Just, you know, look at a lot of deer, and then just look at, gosh, I don't know. I wonder if there's a, I'll put a picture of this buck that I'm talking about that hopefully, some of the measurements I've talked about, you can look at and just be like, okay, well, yeah, I see, you know, I see what that looks like now. Cause it's hard to tell sometimes, especially when you don't know what the length of that year is, you know?
And it's one of those things too, like this, there's a Wyoming buck that I found this summer that, you know, I think if he doesn't break 180 now, he's real, real dang close. Right. And definitely a deer I'm going to try to get after.
Yeah.
But, you know, I looked at it from a distance and I go, that's a big deer, right? But I snuck into 300 yards and really wasn't able to pick it apart then. You know, I don't have like the BTX or like Swaro BTX or Doctor Optics or something that I can pick a flea out of a elk hide at 5,000 yards. Like, I don't have that good of optics, so I did have to kind of get closer in order to really make a good judgment call. And but that's how I come up with that you know, number system that I sent you, Jordan, was I got like super mm-hmm. close, found him bedded down. And then like, as he moved his head, as he was feeding, you know, in the trees, I would like, oh, there's his back left hind. What do you think that is? You know, as I'm talking to myself on the hillside, like, what do you think that is? Oh, that's gotta be, you know, at least 3/4 of an ear. You know, I'd never write it down on my phone. So, you know, a lot of these field judging tips, they really are helped a lot if you can get closer or have just some of the best optics, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, dude, heck yeah. Dude, for sure. So I want to know what you found this year for deer.
What? Well, you know, I've done a lot of glassing here close to the house, and that was kind of what I was saying is like a lot of these bucks here close by, man, they I'm in a place with pretty low quality feed, kind of like you're saying, like some hard grass and sagebrush, bitterbrush. And the bucks just, you know, in addition to probably not getting the total age class, they're not super like heavy. It's hard to really find a deer that has these crazy big, any singular measurement, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I went up into the high country for a weekend and, you know, I saw a handful of deer that were about one, you know, that 160, 150, like great, great frame. And it's early enough. I can't really tell what their times are going to be like, but you know, some good deer. And then I saw one deer that, you know, that was that next level. And that's, man, that's been pretty sweet. And it kind of also like it reinstilled this thought that like, in order to find big deer, you got to go where big deer are. So even though like there's plenty of deer hunting here close to the house, like, and I've been scouting here close just in case I do find that, you know, that diamond in the rough, like it is going to be, it's going to end up being worth it for me to drive 3 and 4 hours to like the place where big deer live. If that's my goal. So, man, that's kind of been what I've been finding. I drew a antelope tag here, like right next to the house. So I've actually been looking at a ton of speed goats because I want to find, yeah. want to find a big speed goat. And that's a whole nother field judging task. It's next level.
Dude, heck. Oh yeah. Have you listened to the podcast I did with Travis Bertrand on that?
No, I haven't. So you're gonna have to send that to me because I need it.
Yeah, dude, I'll send it to you. He does a really good job. There's things that I never even thought about and just things that he talked about that you can use just like at a certain glance and just be like, oh, Jesus, you know what I mean? But yeah, that's cool. And I, just before I forget about it, so I had talked to you about it a little bit, but one of the reasons I had and I really wanted you to get on too is because I had listened to one of the Epic Outdoors podcasts. I think it was episode 97. It was an elk hunting Q&A. And the very first question asked, I think it was at minute 6 because we just talked about it yesterday, was somebody asked Jason how to field judge a bull. And the way that he went through that and talked about field judging bulls, dude, it was like spot on. And I know you've listened to that. And so, and I think we did about along the same lines of that here today with deer.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, you know, maybe if I can help someone, you know, not go as in depth, I would tell someone, you know, to distill it down to a simple method. Look at your inside width, look at your height, look at your tines, use the ears to measure them. And then look at your mass in eye guards. That's about as good as I can get.
Yeah, gotcha. Moving on, we were talking earlier, and you said Go Hunt's got a new mapping system out.
Yeah, they for insiders, they're giving like early access to their mapping system. And I've played with it a little bit. You can like upload some KML files and different stuff, but it looks kind of interesting. So we'll see kind of what they end up with for at the end of the day, what they end up with for like a mobile app and stuff. It's only on desktop, but yeah, I got to screw with it a little bit here just recently. It's kind of cool.
Dude, that's sweet. When did you say that was going to come out or be available?
So it's available for insiders right now to test. Okay. And I think they just sent, you know, because I have my account, I don't know if they just sent it to insiders to check out or not, but it's, it's something I got an email about yesterday. So I was just like, oh, here's another one, you know, competition's getting stiff in the math realm.
Oh, dude. So what do you got lined up for this fall?
Oh, so I have that. I have the general buck tag here in Wyoming.
Nice.
I've got the antelope tag, which I'm super stoked about. It's like 17 days until archery season with that. And I'm, oh man, it's just fun. That's just a good time. General elk tag as well. I got an extra whitetail buck tag, which goes late. So I don't know if I'm going to give that one a ton of time or not. It's kind of like, if everything goes smoothly or doesn't go smoothly, then it's kind of a backup deal. And then I drew a second choice third season tag down in Colorado. So, that's going to be super fun. I haven't ever been to Colorado hunting yet. And I went down there and scouted it in June. It is just, it's sweet country. It's going to be busy. It's going to be like America's mall down there. I'm sure there's going to be people everywhere, but you know, it'll be fun. It'll be a good experience. So that's the one I'm kind of looking forward to the most. What about you? What do you have on tap?
Hell yeah. Oh my God. It's gnarly, dude. Like, so I leave, I'm going to leave here like the 13th of August, I guess. And going to be down in Utah for the opener on the 15th of August for elk. It seems crazy to me, but jeez. been the dude I'm going to film has been patterning bulls and he's like, I think we should try to hunt the opener for a few days while they're still in velvet. So going to go down and do that and then going to come back here and guide speed goat hunter. And then, man, I think I'm going to be gone from like September 27th, probably through September 21st, like one big chunk away from home there. We're going to go to Idaho for bighorn sheep hunt. It's actually the lady that bought the governor's tag this year at Sheep Show. And so I'm going to go on that. And then I'm going to go back down to Utah. If we don't shoot anything the first few days of season, I'm going to do a hunt down there and then going to go back up to Wyoming for mule deer. So going to do that. And then I got a big trip down in Kodiak with Cole Kramer filming some guys from Sig Sauer on a mountain goat hunt. So those are the big ones for this year. It's going to be crazy.
Oh man, that Kodiak hunt's going to be wild. I'm so jealous. That's going to be great.
Yeah, dude, it's good. I was down there, 3 years ago, probably 4 years ago now, filming a girl down there on Kodiak with a mountain goat hunt. And, it was fun, dude. It was crazy. Down there, it was in like November. It was the first week of November on that hunt. And all those like super grassy slopes had snow on them. So we had, that was my first experience with microspikes. And dang, dude, it was crazy. So I'm a little bit happy that we're not going to be down there when it's snowing, at least maybe as much. But it's going to be a good trip. Kodiak is just a very wet place and they don't really... wet and cameras don't really get along, so that's what I've been trying to work on, is making sure that I had all my rain stuff dialed.
Oh geez, yeah. What are you bringing for, just because you and I know we love to talk rain gear, what's your rain gear situation? Is that gonna be first light?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm gonna take the Seek, and that Seek, you know, that stands for Southeast Alaska, so that's kind of what that was designed for. So I'm pretty confident in it. I haven't used that stuff a lot because I just don't go to places that where it rains all the time, you know what I mean? And even the places that I have gone to rain all the time, it just really doesn't. I've been pretty lucky in that I haven't got, you know, it hasn't been like 3 days straight of rain. But I'm pretty confident in that stuff, and so that's what I'm going to be taking with me.
Oh, sweet. Well, I can't wait to see what you guys come up with. I'm sure you're going to have some sweet videos for us next year. So, can't wait. Those are always so good.
Dude, thanks. Yeah, it's going to be cool. I think we're going to have, so I'm going to film 3 rock slide hunts this year, I think. And then they're going to have another videographer do a couple of them, and I'm going to edit all of them. So, I mean, there should be quite a few rock slide films coming out this year that should be good. And then, you know, one of these hunts is for Crispy Boots, and we're going to try to get that back into a full draw film tour. We got in this last year, but they canceled all of them. So it's actually tonight is when they're coming out with a couple more, and then ours is going to go tomorrow on YouTube. So I'm not sure if they're going to let those, I'm sure that they would just let them stay on. I don't think you have to watch them for the premiere. So if anybody wants to go watch that, they could probably go watch it now.
Oh, that's sweet. I'll definitely go to give those a check too.
Dude, yeah. Yeah, good times. Well, man, I will I'll let you go. Is there anything closing out you want people to know about?
Oh, if folks are interested in some more mule deer content, I've been interviewing a ton of folks on the Rich Outdoors podcast. That's the Patreon feed in particular. So you do have to pay, you have to buy Cody and I, well, you have to buy one beer, $5 a month, and Cody and I have to split it. So go do that. It's really helpful to support that podcast through that extra work we're doing on the Muley Mondays and Wapiti Wednesdays. And other than that, I am working for Wyoming Wildlife Federation now. So if you want to know more about some of the conservation work, hit me up on Instagram, and my handle's at Jane Bales. That's all.
Dude, hell yeah. Well, thanks a ton. We got to keep in touch, and hopefully we'll get you on again after you kill that deer, and then we can see how close you were on score.
I'm hoping he grows a couple inches, not because I wouldn't be happy with a 177 inch buck, but it would just be really neat. I think he's got a little more juice left in him, so I'll let you know how that all goes for
dude,
sure.
Dude, hell thanks, yeah. Yeah, you bet. Sounds good. Thanks, Jade.
Bye-bye.